This week on Making Contact.
These are the first calf heifers. They just start having their babies. And the ones with the first calves, we got to keep them in here close so we can watch them, make sure each one takes their calf.
On this edition, we visit the bucolic pastures of West Marin County, just across the Golden Gate Bridge from San Francisco. Back in the days of horse-drawn wagons and hand milking, the area was nicknamed Cow Heaven.
And we had a full of calf the other night at 1 o'clock in the morning. She was never having it. So it had the nose and the one leg was coming, the other leg was back. We saved her.
Real estate prices in San Francisco are topping the charts, so one would expect West Marin to be populated by malls and big box stores today. Yet remarkably, it remains an agricultural greenbelt of family farmers. How did this happen? In the next half hour, correspondent Claire Schoen explains. I'm Tina Rubio, your host on Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information.
This is the story of how a place once slated for development, with major highways, airports, and subdivisions, was permanently preserved as farms and agricultural open space. Welcome to Cow Heaven. The first settlers to West Marin County were not farmers, but hunters and gatherers. For thousands of years, the Coast Miwok Indians lived along the shores of Tomales Bay, which defines this region. And they're still present here today. Acorn was a staple food, but as tribal elder Lanny Panola tells us, 80% of their diet came from the ocean.
They ate the fine kelp that we call seaweed. They also would trap the fish as they came up the streams, and they would dig clams along the bay, and they also would go out in the bay and trap ducks.
The area's marshlands contribute to the abundance of wildlife, as naturalist Jewel Evans explains.
This is a seasonal marsh. In other words, it's flooded or hydrated in the winter, and it dries out in the summer. And you might find any of the species of birds that occur in the greater Point Reyes area. Greater scaup, surf scoters, ruddy duck, bufflehead, pintail and widgeon, loons and grebes, terns of various species, willets, marbled godwits, long-billed curlews, peeps, the Dunlin, least and western sandpiper. There's a whole array.
Life here was defined by the physical landscape, which created this abundance and supported both the Miwoks and later settlers as well. Agriculture has thrived in West Marin since the mid-19th century, when the Californios, the first Mexican land grantees, settled here. Point Reyes became known as the birthplace of the California dairy industry, and during the gold rush, it was famous for the other gold, butter. Soon, immigrants from Ireland, Switzerland, Portugal, Italy, and other countries established family farms that are still a vital part of the local economy. Boyd Stewart was born on his father's dairy here in 1903.
Men worked 10-hour days in those days, started early and ended late. They didn't have any 40-hour week. Nobody had dreamt about it.
Merv McDonald still remembers his grandfather's stories.
Monday was wash day, another day was ironing day, another day was go-to-town day, and things were nothing like now.
When the workday was finished, people found ways to entertain themselves.
Anytime you had two or three milkers, there'd be one or two that could play some instrument, all the way from the jew's harp to violins, but lots of guitars. And harmonicas were very, very common. Every store sold harmonicas. Men would, in the evening or on a Sunday, they would play. Yeah, the fellow riding along on a horse and playing a harmonica, you don't see anymore.
In the early years, butter made at local dairies was shipped out on schooners that sailed into Drake's Estero or right into Tomales Bay. Then, in 1875, the North Pacific Coast Narrow Gauge Railroad was built. For the next six decades, the train came through the town of Point Reyes Station several times a day, on tracks which ran right down the main street. The hissing, steaming engines transported lumber from the Russian River, potatoes from the town of Tamales, and fish caught in Tamales Bay. Then they picked up boxes of the famous Point Reyes butter at the creamery building at the end of town. All of it was San Francisco bound. Boyd Stewart remembers how it used to be.
Point Reyes itself was a windswept little place with a few houses in it and quite a bit of business. A big enough business so that that hotel was busy. If you wanted to go someplace, you went by train. If you wanted something, you had to come in by train.
Sheep rancher Bill Jensen.
Those had to have been some boom days for this country. Boomtown. Big time. You know, in and out of all these towns once or twice a day with a little old train, leaving people off, picking people up, you know, and they're looking for work, or they're stopping at the bar or staying overnight in the hotel or making a business deal or doing whatever, you know. Would have been an interesting time to live in.
In fact, in the late 19th century, Marin County was the leading producer of dairy products in California. Quite an accomplishment when you consider what was involved. Boyd Stewart milked cows by hand.
You sat there and sweated in a warm day for 3 hours milking cows. A very, very good milker could milk a string of 30 cows in 3 hours. He had to be a good milker and have strong hands and been doing it all the time.
Today up at my operation, one man is milking 480 cows.
Milking machines changed the dairy business dramatically in the 1940s when Bob Giacomini started out.
We milk them three times a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And that includes Christmas, Easter, and all the rest of the holidays. So there's no time off. We have 15 milking machines in the barn, and they're milking 450 milk cows today. They've all got numbers, and the numbers are all on the computer. And so each animal is tracked from the day she's born till the day she leaves this ranch. And as those cows come in, the milker puts an iodine dip on the cow. At that point, he puts a machine on the cow. It takes about 5 minutes for a cow to milk out on the average. And then the machine comes off automatically. The man doesn't have to touch it. And then the cow goes out. She eats her meal, lays down, and then starts the process all over again. We're producing about 4,500 gallons a day. The milk truck comes out here and picks it up once a day, and it's made into all kinds of different dairy products, from whole milk to ice cream to cheese to butter to yogurt and on and on.
While farming practices have changed, many of the families that run the farms have not. In fact, a number of these family farms have been in continuous operation since the 1850s. Bill Jensen is the fifth generation of his family to work his Tamales Ranch.
My great-great-grandfather immigrated here from Belfast, Ireland in 1856 and settled on the ranch that I live on.
Bob Giacomini and Merv McDonald are both third-generation West Marin ranchers.
My grandfather came over here in 1904, and they bought 100 chickens and 6 cows, and they raised 7 kids, one of them being my father. And we've been here ever since.
My wife's family, they're all dairy people. We're beef people, they're dairy people. And they've been around a long time, too. My grandfather came from Ireland. And then on my mother's side, they came from Switzerland. So there's a lot of people with a lot of roots in this area.
Most of these families originally immigrated from Europe.
You just had to have it awful bad where you came from. Why else would you put yourself on a ship and sail to America? The people that came to this country originally had to be the toughest damn people in the world.
You know, they're hollering about the immigrants nowadays. They were all immigrants at one time.
Among the newest immigrants to the area are Mexicans. Just as many of the early newcomers started out as ranch hands, today's immigrants often find work on West Marin ranches. Roberto Vallejo is a dairy foreman. He comes from a ranching family in Jalisco, Mexico.
Yo lo hice con mi papá.
I did this with my papa when we were in Mexico. He had his own ranch in Mexico, and cows, and so that's where I learned to handle them. And today, with all the years that I've been working here, I have learned more.
Most of the ranches depend pretty much on the Hispanics doing the milking and handling the animals. And we're very fortunate to have them here.
Cuando llegamos aquí, no simplemente nos ayudamos nosotros.
When we come here, we are not only helping ourselves, we also help the owners of the ranch. For us, by searching for a better future for our family, for our children, and for them, by improving their businesses.
Bill Jensen raises about 400 sheep in West Marin. He helps the ewes to lamb, doctors them if they get sick, and watches for potential problems.
The chute, it's called a dodge chute or a race, and I'm going to fill these pens with sheep, and these sheep are going to file themselves right through this foot bath. We say we dodge our animals out. Come on, come on. Shh, shh, shh. There's Clorox and sulfate mix in there, and it'll take care of any foot problems that we might have. Okay, I'm going to open the gate right now, and we'll let this thing go. Come on, come on, come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. If you're in too much of a hurry with these animals, they'll just give you nothing but trouble. Sheep are like people. They'll follow each other if you just give them a chance.
But ranchers like Bill Jensen might not be around today if developers had gotten their way. With the opening of the Golden Gate Bridge in 1937, Marin County began to grow. And by the 1950s, farm by farm, agricultural land in East Marin was being sold for housing tracts. Then developers set their sights on West Marin.
They had housing, a lot of houses, shopping centers, anything.
I think there were 41,000 acres with 51,000 development units.
It would have been suburbs.
Dairywoman Ellen Strauss and beef rancher Al Poncha recalled the proposed West Marin Master Plan, which envisioned a city of 150,000 here on Tomales Bay. A major highway would have replaced the scenic two-lane road. There were plans for condos and shopping malls. And as for the black and white Holstein cows that dot this countryside?
The West Marin Master Plan never ever mentioned the word agriculture.
I have a lot of flat land, and it was zoned mostly for homes.
Highway 1 was going to be four-lane. They were going to have also a parkway up on the ridge. You remember that, Al?
That's something I'd like to forget.
Speculators were buying up land all around Tomales Bay, and it seemed as though development was inevitable. Many farmers were worried, but others saw the financial advantage in harvesting their last crop, the land, and moving on.
I attended a meeting at the West Marin School with my father, probably when I was 16. Every rancher that was there, none of them spoke about agriculture. They all spoke about the demise of agriculture and the establishment of subdivisions and development.
I knew that we should face reality and move to Mendocino County because we couldn't stop progress.
Instead, Ellen Strauss and her family chose to stay and try to save family farms. So did Al Poncha.
I wanted to stay in agriculture. And I said, look, I want a shot at it. I want a chance.
There was a new generation of young ranchers, and they were really dedicated to their own ranches. They loved their ranches. They wanted to have a future on the ranch. And I think that was very important.
Once it's broken up, you can never go back and redo it. And so that's when I became involved to try and stop this development.
I was hoping against hope that somehow we could change that plan.
The ranchers found an unexpected ally in environmentalists like Dr. Martin Griffin, founder of the Audubon Canyon Ranch Wildlife Preserve.
People in Marin County began to realize that they had a unique resource in wildlife that needed protection here. So you had this tremendous environmental awareness that was awakening.
But in the beginning, the ranchers were suspicious. Bob Giacomini.
There was certainly suspicion. I mean, the ranching community is very conservative, very tight-knit community, and they don't move too quickly, and maybe that's not bad. And so when a new person comes on the block, you got to look him from his nose to his toes before you decide that you like his belly button, I guess.
Eventually, environmentalists won the trust of ranchers by supporting their concerns. Wetland biologist and teacher Phyllis Faber.
The farmers were having real problems. And so when the milk price was under consideration, a lot of people said, we want to support the farmers. They need that increase in milk price, and we want those farms to succeed.
A unique alliance developed between farmers, environmentalists, and soon government. Peter Douglas, now executive director of the California Coastal Commission, was working for the state legislature at the time.
From my perspective in Sacramento, it was an alliance of convenience, often, and of necessity.
It was not a love fest, but it was a situation in which people respected each other and communicated with each other. We could talk across the table.
Together, these three groups worked to change zoning laws to protect agriculture in the county. And in 1972, West Marin farmland was rezoned as A60. A for agriculture and 60 for 60 acres. Only one house would be allowed on each 60 acres of land.
A60 was incredible. When that passed in my neighborhood, there were 2,200 acres that went back from the investment companies to ranchers.
We'll have more in a few moments. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. You can also download programs or get our podcast at radioproject.org.
So development in West Marin County was stopped, at least for the time being. However, farmers are not only battling developers, but nature itself. Erosion is a problem here, especially during big rainstorms, which can carry sediment into the creeks and down to the bay. Bill Jensen.
You can never really plan for how bad a winter is going to happen. You don't know what kind of rain to expect, because these hills in the wintertime can be, they can just really... I got three or four humongous landslides this year that just came off the hills. I couldn't do anything about it.
Much of this problem is natural, though roads and grazing can add to it. Local ranchers are trying to minimize the impact of their operations.
I try not to put so many head of livestock on the property that I just strip it. But still, you can only do so much. You need to try to keep it grazed at a rate that, still allows some pasture to be there and then still get some dollar return.
If you take care of the grass will take care of you. But if you nip it all down and then you get soil erosion and the country looks terrible and the weeds start to grow. So it's management. That's all it is.
Though Tomales Bay is one of the cleanest inlets on the entire Pacific coast, there's always the risk of contamination. From recreational use, from bayside home septic systems, and from ranch operation runoff. Bob Giacomini has developed a sophisticated system to recycle water on his dairy so pollutants don't wash into the bay.
This is our manure collection pit here, where all of the flush water that cleans all of the alleyways where the cows stay is flushed down to this pit and collected here. And from here, it is pumped into that separator. About 90% of the solids is taken out, and then the water is dumped into this pond here. And then we take that up and recycle it and keep flushing these alleyways with it. It just keeps going around the cycle, and twice a year they are pumped out onto the fields, which is fertilizer for the fields, which we don't have to buy on a commercial basis.
Keeping Tomales Bay clean is important economically as well as environmentally. It's been a fishing center since the time of the Coast Miwoks, and at its peak, herring caught in Tomales Bay were considered the best in California. Oysters have been grown commercially here since at least the early part of the 20th century, when growers relocated from San Francisco Bay, which had become polluted. A healthy aquaculture industry is directly related to water quality. Oyster farmers Terry Sawyer and John Finger are both trained as marine biologists.
Oysters are what they eat. They're filter feeders. They can pick up all sorts of contaminants that are in the water. So it's really important to be able to grow them in a clean body of water.
We're in an interesting position here because we sort of have our finger on the pulse of the bay. We have to.
The more that we have businesses or livelihoods tied to the environment being in good shape, the more chances we're going to have of keeping the environment in good shape.
Preserving farmland is important for the farmers, but What does it mean to the rest of us?
I think there's value in people knowing why it's important to preserve a place like this. It's about people's livelihood. It's about good, healthy food. And the closer they are to that, the more chances they're going to have of knowing why.
Some West Marin ranchers have begun to diversify their dairy or beef operations by growing wine grapes, olives, and other specialty crops on part of their land. Organic farmers have found that consumers like knowing that their fruits, vegetables, and dairy products were produced without pesticides. Besides, local, seasonal food just plain tastes better. Jerry Lunsford sells Tamales Bay oysters at the San Francisco Farmers Market every weekend.
Direct producer-to-consumer connection is critical to maintain the public's awareness of the small family farm in America today.
These are the bigs. I didn't know if they were big or gigantic or...
Just about 1/16 of an inch. You'll feel the knife pop in, twist to the side, and the oyster's open. Slide the knife along the top, flip the oyster over, it's ready to eat.
Familiar taste. I like it.
I enjoy meeting a lot of the farmers, and you get to know them, and they have real knowledge and real background on their product, and it's very nice.
Farms located near cities enrich urban life. Yet urban sprawl is a constant threat to the countryside. In West Marin, A60 zoning was good medicine, but it was no cure. Al Poncho.
At first, most people couldn't afford to come out and buy a 60-acre parcel. Today, someone could easily buy a 60-acre parcel and put a $300,000 or $400,000 house on it.
Besides, any election can bring in new zoning board members who favor changing the laws to encourage development. It worried organic dairy farmer Ellen Strauss. She and her friend Phyllis Faber, a wetland biologist, put their heads together.
It was really on a walk when we were talking about the problems and what could make the difference for agriculture in this county.
Just got an idea that one of the ways to protect agricultural land was to take the development rights off.
If the development potential was taken off of the land, then there would be certainty that it always would be agricultural.
And that led to the idea of an agricultural land trust. You know, the land trust idea has been around since, I don't know, maybe probably the 1700s. But what was new, apparently, was it had never been used on agricultural land.
Up to now, a land trust meant buying up the land and locking it up in a park. This was a new idea. Simply buy the development rights for a farm or ranch, leaving the ownership of the land itself in the farmer's hands.
What a rancher gives up is the right to subdivide. No one can buy his land and subdivide it, and he is paid the difference between the value of his land as agricultural land and the market value that he would get by selling it on the open market.
The land stays in private hands, in the rancher's hands. All you're buying is really the restriction on that land, what he can do with that land.
And so that seemed like a next step to take.
And I only remember that Phyllis one day said, okay, let's do it.
In 1980, MALT, the Marin Agricultural Land Trust, was formed, the first agricultural land trust in the nation. Money to fund projects is raised from grants, state funds, and the ongoing support of members. So far, MALT has protected many thousands of acres of West Marin farmland that might have been subdivided or developed. Both Bill Jensen and Al Poncha now have MALT easements on their ranches.
I agreed not to subdivide my land, and I got a payment of dollars for that.
You do whatever you want with your land within the parameters of the MALT agreement. You're not developing it. You're not making roads that go all over the property or buildings all over the place.
If my land needs to be sold, that can still be done. The restriction will go along with it, but at today's prices, the return would still be pretty substantial.
Farmers join MALT for a variety of reasons.
For the investment, for inheritance taxes, other people have done it so that they could expand their operation.
Bill Jensen was thinking about his children.
As I look right around here, I can see thousands of acres of land right now that are protected from being developed. That's the kind of place I'm going to want to live, and I'd like my kids to be able to live for years.
Christine and Jim Jensen do seem interested in carrying on their family's farming tradition.
I love agriculture a lot.
Because I do have so many ties to it, I think it could really be something that's worthwhile for me to hang on to rather than just kind of forget where I came from.
We do a lot of work whenever we have to get the sheep in or something like that. We help.
We do the fun stuff with the lambs. And when they're babies, a lot of times we get to feed the bummer lambs, which are the lambs that don't have a mother for one reason or another. And we bottle feed them.
Nina, you're hungry. Nina. Yeah, Nina. This one's mine. My sister's got one that's 2 years old, and she's going to sell it next year. So you just got to feed them every morning and every night, some hay, grain, give her milk. You just got to take care of them, and when it gets ready for the fair, you clip them and wash them and clean them. They don't like that.
But can you really keep them down on the farm?
As long as you keep the opportunity there, something can happen. Today, I look at it for, like, for my son and maybe his children. If the place is here, then the opportunity is still there for the next generation.
Like hard work, a strong sense of community is part of the farming life.
It's nice living in a small community because you get to know everybody and everybody knows you, and it's pretty safe.
I guess the biggest thing is that I get out of bed in the morning and look forward to going to work. A lot of people go to work simply because they know they got to put bread and butter on the table for the family. So I go to work and I get the butter free.
There's no other life for us.
Marin County is a model for farmland preservation throughout the nation, thanks to legislation, land use planning, and the creation of the Marin Agricultural Land Trust.
Our major accomplishments are things you don't see. It's the public access that hasn't been lost. It's the subdivisions that didn't occur. It's the agricultural land that wasn't converted.
Tener este lugar así como está ahorita es algo bien importante porque
to keep this place here the way that is now is something very important. Because the people here, they know who they are and where they are going. And that's very important.
This is ranch land. It's got to stay ranch land. Somebody's got to feed these people. So it might as well be me producing it. And you need that land to do it with.
But the people of West Marin have learned that the land is never saved. It is always in the process of being saved.
We've had so many people back us in this struggle, and it's not easy, and it's not going to be easy in the future. But I think we're going to do it. I think we're going to succeed here.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. This program was produced and directed by Claire Schoen and written by Elizabeth Pitak. Music by Banana. Special thanks to Steve Tokar and to the Marin Agricultural Land Trust, in memory of Alan Strauss, Boyd Stewart, and Lanny Panola, who have passed away since their interviews were originally recorded. Making Contact is an independent production funded primarily by generous gifts of people in the community. For a CD copy of program number 1606, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736 or go to radioproject.org. Lisa Rudman is our executive director, Justin Beck producer, Dorian Taylor communications manager, Esther Mania outreach coordinator, Tom Evans development associate, Alina Potts and Stefana Petrova production interns, and Dan Turner, Ronald Recker, Yasuyu Nagata, and Akila Bridgeford volunteers. I'm Tina Rubio. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.